This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of April 26th, 2021. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Last week, I had a little bit of free time and temporarily available mental capacity to take a close look at the family finances to see if we have money for some spring improvements around the house. And I was very grateful to see an extra $4,200 in our bank account from the federal government as part of the American Rescue Plan. That's the third stimulus package since the pandemic started to send Americans checks. I also was happy to see how well the stock market has performed since initially cratering at the beginning of the pandemic. If you go back 12 months, you'll see that the S&P 500 is now up 49%. Go 401k. And then I remembered something that Pete Dunn, aka Pete the Planner, wrote for IBJ in his personal finance column recently. Quote, "Our economy is on the verge of potentially the greatest boom time of all time." Now that sounds pretty good. It's a persuasive argument for doing a modest bathroom remodel this spring. But Pete added a huge caveat. The danger of the windfall is that we will fall back into our destructive consumer habit of overspending. And we definitely don't want to reset our spending habits based on artificial income from the stimulus. And we very well may be tempted to do it because even more money is now on the way, at least for eligible families. Beginning in July, we'll begin receiving payments from the government through the Enhanced Child Tax Credit, which is also part of the American Rescue Plan. In essence, the child tax credit that you get every year will increase to between $3,000 and $3,600 per child for 2021, depending on the age of each child. The government is going to give us half of it in cash in installments over the last half of the year. Now, that's a lot to absorb. And if you're the type of person who likes to plan, there's plenty to sink your teeth into. So I gave Pete a ring so he could bring me up to speed on all things related to stimulus and the direction our economy and the stock market is headed. And I hope some of this will be educational for you as well. Here's our conversation. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the podcast Pete Dunn. You know him as Pete the Planner. How are you? It is great to see you.
I'm doing good. My spirits are lifted. About a week ago or so, I decided to leave my home during the workday and come into my regular offices. So I'm in a dungeon of my studio with lots of artificial light, and I love it. My spirits are lifted, Mason.
Well, the last time we spoke was kind of mid to late January, and I think we made a tentative date to talk about stimulus. Does that sound a good place to start?
Sure. We can absolutely start there. And at some point during our discussion, I would love to talk what I got the most wrong or the wrongest. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to have to Google that. What I just totally missed the boat on during all my predictions I've made in the last year. We'll do that at some point.
That's a great idea. I love that. I want to go to a recent column for IBJ, and it was in a way, it was kind of a prelude into the discussion of stimulus, where you said our economy is on the verge of potentially the greatest boom of all time. And you didn't really elaborate on that. I would love for you to give us a quick elaboration on why you think that is.
All right. So there's a couple things that can make for an economic boom. Number one, there's just the concept of demand itself, which can be driven by different things. This form of demand, though, is a pent-up consumer demand. Not only that people need stuff, but people are so used to, within our consumer-based economy, spending money that they actually get that hit of dopamine from spending. It is a vice that they've gone without, this sort of freewheeling, I don't care, let's blow money. So that is real. I think that pent-up demand exists in a lot of different industries. The other element to it that is where this gets sort of hairy is there's a lot of what I like to call artificial income in our economy in the year 2021. That is to say, you know, there's more rounds of stimulus. We're going to talk a little bit about even this thing called plus up stimulus. Advanced child tax credits are on the way in July. People don't understand what is about to happen with that. I think we actually talked about that in January. And I previewed it. I said, it's coming. It's going to blow people's minds. Well, it's still going to blow people's minds. This is all to say people are going to have thousands of dollars more in 2021 to stoke their consumerism. And come 2022, that vibe is still going to be there of wanting to spend money, but the income's not. I think we reach this potential for the pendulum of consumerism to hit a wall in the spring of 2022 as people realize that their ammunition for spending has dried up.
Are you saying that we're possibly going to hit a consumer debt wall, or there's going to be a wave of consumer debt that's going to get us into the same problems that we had, going back for decades?
The good news is I think the economic problems that will come in 2022 hopefully aren't pandemic related, right? They aren't directly pandemic related. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. Don't listen to me about that. But what I will say, if you look at consumer confidence charts and numbers through the years, what you'll see is as consumer confidence rises, so does consumer debt. Okay, so if we're entering a period of time in which consumer confidence is going to take off and has taken off, you can only surmise that consumer debt will as well. And the strange part, of course, consumer confidence was in the tank in 2020, and consumer debt levels came down because people couldn't spend money. So they said, well, we might as well pay off the purchases we made before we were terrified.
As an investor, I hear economic boom and I think, oh, how do I take advantage of this? The greed centers in my brain light up.
Sure. Yeah, without giving specific recommendations, I'll probably mention some companies, but again, these are not specific recommendations. But you can start to think of what industries got beaten up so bad that their stocks reflected that. And then you can say, are those industries coming back? And can I get a bargain and ride it on its way up? I think travel and hospitality might be a good way to look there. And then the other side of that too is possibly taking gains on stocks that benefited from us all being sequestered into our homes for a year, right? I mean, even Peloton, which rode high, and no pun intended, for quite some time, has run into some issues in terms of consumer safety here recently, which has had it pull back. But then you start to ask, well, if home gyms are no longer the only way people can work out and people can actually be outside on a bicycle, even though someone's not yelling at you at a monitor 7 inches in front of your face, will their sales suffer? And so you start to think through stuff like that. I'll have to tell you, Mason, I read some news the other day about this idea that people are going to have to get jabbed in the arm a third time and maybe a fourth time and a fifth time. You could say, well, who's jabbing people in the arms? Who's the company filling up the syringes? And maybe that can make sense long term. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. The market has done remarkably well yet again this year with over a half year to go. So lots of good opportunity.
So how do we not fall into the trap then of overspending now that we feel flush and are just excited about getting out and buying stuff?
I always think that no matter whether it was an accident or on purpose that a mistake was made, right? Whether it's sort of a voluntary or involuntary mistake, you still have to learn from it, right? If you touch a hot pan on the stove on accident and it burns you, you got to learn. If you touch a hot pan on the stove on purpose and you just didn't think about it, you're going to learn from it. And that's the mindset I want people to have right now is you had to react to so much adversity last year. And arguably, a lot of people accomplished a lot of really great things in their financial lives in 2020. And a lot of it was just good defense, right? And so what I would tell people is, the focus has to shift from defense to offense. It has to be, let's proactively make decisions around our financial stability as opposed to just playing defense. And for me, that means this artificial income that's coming in, if you happen to be getting it, you should either use that income to do some repairs on your financial life from 2020, which include getting out of debt or saving a little bit of money, doing physical repairs on your home or car that maybe just got delayed because of 2020. Or the third thing, of course, put it to really good use in terms of investments or an experience. The challenge that we don't want people to do, and I even read a story here this morning, is if you take on new obligations which are jump-started by this artificial income, that's a problem. If you form a new lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
Create a payment. That I mean, I know retailers and car dealers are not loving what I'm saying right now, but if you create a new payment based on this artificial income, you will regret it 12 months from today.
We got the stimulus money on March 17th. You know, the family got the check from the government. I think that was the third COVID-related stimulus package. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, yes, it was. You got a check last April, probably. You got one at the end of 2020, and then you got this latest one here, I guess you said, in March.
Okay. Now, let's move to the enhanced child tax credit. Was that part of the third stimulus package?
It is. Okay. So every year, people get a child tax credit if they qualify. If you have a 17-year-old or younger, you receive some semblance of a tax credit, meaning when you file your taxes, you settle up with the government and you say, okay, I'm going to utilize this credit me for taxes paid. And it oftentimes can result in a refund, okay? Well, what the government said is, if we're going to do that anyway, why not get the money in people's hands now? Or why settle up at the end of the year? And so starting in July, the IRS is going to mail checks to anyone who has a 17-year-old or younger. And if you have a 5-year-old or younger, you get $300 a month per child. If you've got a 6 to a 17-year-old, you get $250 a month per child. And they still haven't figured out whether they're going to send them periodically, whether they're going to send them monthly, whether there's going to be a chunk here or there. They're actually still working that out. But it starts in July, and there are income limits to that, right? Just like the stimulus program. But Mason, I think you want to talk about what's really going to boost the economy. I think monthly checks. I'm not part of the Yang Gang here in terms of universal basic income, but I will say that giving people monthly checks for 2 or 3 kids, holy cow, the economy is going to take off in August and September.
Mm. That's a lot of baby formula.
We did the math on this. Mm. A family of 4 who's below the income limit, with the stimulus and then the tax credits, and you know, 2 kids under the age of 6. You're looking at like something like $13,000 of additional income in the year 2021. That's wild. I mean, that just, you know, I'm not even judging it as good or bad. I'll let other people argue about that in the comments section. I'll just say that, like, that's wild. That is truly going to stimulate economy, which in 2020, the stimulus payments were more about survival, especially last April. They had very little to do with stimulus because clearly the economy was not stimulated by those payments.
There was an additional, the plus, you called it the...
Plus up.
I've actually attempted to understand this and I just couldn't handle it.
All right, well, let's...
Tell me what a plus up is.
Well, first of all, a bless up is just a prayer. A glow up is when you look better now than you used to. A plus up is where you get an additional stimulus check that makes things right based on how your income changed in 2020. So let's create this hypothetical scenario in which in 2019, Mason, you had an amazing year that did not qualify you for any stimulus payments, all right? Because your 2019 income was just too high. Well, let's say you hit hard times in 2020, and once you filed your tax return here in 2021 for the year 2020, it showed that you had a lower level of income, which actually would have qualified you for the stimulus payment that you didn't receive. The plus up makes it right. It says, oops, our bad, here you go. And that can include, let's say that you were in the phase out limit where you were losing $1,000 per whatever, or 10 bucks, whatever. Or you had a kid in 2020, and then that changed the complexity of your stimulus funds that you were due. So the plus up payments, which are going out every week now, hundreds of thousands of them, are making that right, which is going to surprise a lot of people. Like, because people, being you might know this, people don't often pay attention to all elements of the news, especially economic news. And so that's to say people are going to look in their bank account or go to their mailbox, and there's going to be just random hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of money from the government. And they're going to not actually believe it. They may throw it away or believe it's a scam. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. So Doug, this might be a good time to mention the things that you got wrong.
Oh man. Okay. I got a lot right in the last year, and the sad part about it is I can't be happy about it because a lot of the things I got right were awful. Like they were just terrible. I wrote a Twitter thread in like March 15th or something like that of 2020 that was like 12 tweets long, and I nailed everything and it was awful. And I don't regret it, but it's just like, what? But I got some stuff wrong. On my radio show, I think very early on, I said to my co-host, you know what I think's going to happen with this economy as it relates to this recession that's going to happen? I think it's going to begin to close the wealth gap. And Mason, I said that thinking this is such a weird thing that's happening. It would take the weirdest thing to happen to be able to close the wealth gap, to take people who are doing well and bring them down and thus sort of closing the wealth gap. Boy, what a dumb assertion that was. I mean, I venture a guess that people should never listen to me again based on that one simple thought. Here's what happened. The market was getting crushed. By March 23rd, it had fallen 34% from its February 19th high. So that is going to bring down wealth for those that hold it. Well, during this period of time, I made this assumption. Therefore, when the market recovered in 148 days and the wealth gap grew again, and then the market recovered so much so that it was up, you know, a ton in 2020, it made the wealth gap much, much worse. Remember, the wealth gap's not about income per se. The income gap is something different. The wealth gap is about people who have invested assets, and those assets are exposed to the opportunity for gain. And if you don't have those assets, then that gap just keeps growing. So chalk a real big dumb one up for your buddy Pete.
Yeah, the way I've started to think about it is it's easy to make money if you already have a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's actually true. You know, back in the day when I was a financial advisor, I would always often, you know, meet a young person that has like $1,000 to their name, and they would say, all right, can we invest this? And you know, you always respect that. It's all the money in the world to them. It's not like I'm going to look at them like it's only $1,000. It's all the money to them, but they want to get similar dollar returns than their wealthier friends. So if their very wealthy friend who had $100,000 got a $10,000 return, which is a 10% rate of return, and this same person just invested $1,000 also wants a 10% rate of return, they're gonna get $100 at the end of the year, not $10,000. And they look at you and they go, what are you doing wrong? And it's like, I'm not doing anything wrong. This is why the wealthy stay wealthy, because it's the same amount of work, but a lot more gain.
Yeah, and you gotta stay in the game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the interesting parts about what's going on right now is all these alternative investments, and we may have even talked about this here recently, all these alternative investments going on, like cryptocurrency and NFTs and all of these just really strange investment instruments, even to the point of talking about GameStop and how Reddit changed the market manipulation game. What you find is a lot of principles of money management, very basic investment principles, are just completely being ignored right now. People don't understand when you trade on online platforms and you take the same stock and buy it and sell it and buy it and sell it and buy it and sell it, that you have tax ramifications to that. And so people are getting giant tax bills because they just didn't understand what they were doing because it was just so popular to try to trade these stocks and different types of investments.
One of the lessons in the way that I usually put it is invest it and forget it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I am a Ron Popeil Showtime Rotisserie investor. I set it and forget it. Like I really do. I do not personally trade stocks on a turnover basis. When I was a financial advisor, I didn't really do that either. I just, you know, you and I have got enough to worry about in our lives as opposed to just sitting and watching your screen all day. Now, some people can pull it off and they're interested in it and maybe they got nothing else to do, but I just leave it alone. I'm not going to need it for a couple decades anyway. I still believe pretty strongly in this idea of the K-shaped recovery. I still feel like that is a thing. Even if you look at industries like childcare, where there's just not a lot of child care going on because of the logistics of schooling and all of that, I still think there's a K-shaped recovery. And
we're people who don't know what that means, what was the K-shaped recovery?
Part of the economy has not only recovered, but it is headed vertically, right? At like the top leg of a K. I don't know, is it called a leg? And then the bottom leg of the K is headed south towards the bottom of a piece of paper. And so there's some parts of the economy, some industries that are still really struggling, trying to gain footing.
What are the prospects for another set of stimulus payments? I mean, there've been so many, honestly, I've kind of forgotten where we are.
That's a great question. And I've thought about that recently. I'm going to try not to give you an opinion here that okay. It's too political, right? I can't believe I'm saying this. I think it's likely. And I don't want to say I don't want it to be likely. Not that I don't want it to happen. From my perspective, which is a privileged perspective, I don't believe it's necessary. But then again, I think it's going to happen. And I think the bigger concern is if the unemployment benefits being extended. I thought it was extended to the right level. I think if it extends beyond this with pretty low unemployment numbers right now, you're going to see the economy stall out because you're going to find things like restaurants and hospitality workers not going back to work and simply potentially taking advantage of a higher payout by filing unemployment. That is not meant to sound accusatory. I'm just going off of what I've seen.
Okay. What do your clients want to know right now? What are the main questions that you're getting?
We deal with employees of companies, right? We are professional financial problem solvers. So we're still solving personal finance issues. The biggest questions we're answering right now all revolve around housing, right? Of should I sell my house because the market's so hot? And if I do, what do I do after that? Or, hey, we were going to buy our first home. What do we do? So everything is housing related. Well, those are all the questions we're answering right now. And I don't envy people in those positions trying to make those decisions for themselves because it's a scary landscape. Mrs. Planner and I bought our house in October of 2007, right? I don't know if you know what happened a year later to the housing market, Mason.
No idea.
Oh, man. So
explain this to me very quickly.
Oh, it tanked pretty bad, right? Okay. And it didn't matter because we were already in the house. But then you start to think, well, man, we could have gotten this house for 20% less than what we bought it for. So there's going to be a lot of that coming in the next several years. And I do worry that actually makes the wealth gap worse. I think that makes upward mobility tougher, is that if housing prices keep climbing, I saw a report this morning that the average new car price or sale price in the United States is now north of $37,000. You start hearing stuff like that and you're like, man, middle America is just getting priced out of lifestyle things. And so that's upsetting.
You bring up this interesting question, or your clients do. Yeah, if I am in my 20s, my 30s, and I was dreaming of owning a house, and now, the chances of me being a winner in one of these sweepstakes, maybe that's not even the right word, the bidding wars for any available house are pretty small. Do I just sort of emotionally uninvest myself in this goal and just keep saving for another day?
Honestly, that's what I would do. What happens, we get fixated on certain elements of our financial lives, and housing's the number one example of that. Our house is a shelter, it's a roof, but it's a lot more to us. Like, it speaks to who we are, it defines us. And so people get really hung up on that. And so I would say that, yeah, if you find yourself just fighting an uphill battle, then I'd probably bow out. And it's not quitting, it's discretion. The other example of that used to happen a long time ago, doesn't happen as much now, is people would get declined for pre-approval on a mortgage. And so it would frustrate them so much that they would just fight through that and keep going to places until they got a yes because of their obsession over home ownership. And now, while you and I might see that as like being hard-nosed and I'm never going to give up, no, that's a terrible idea. If people who make money on lending money to people say they don't want to lend you money, run, don't try to borrow money. It's a mistake. There's a reason. And so That's not what's happening now, but it's a similar example of how this mania towards housing can cause people to do some pretty silly things.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, buddy. I appreciate it.
We'll see you soon.
My thanks again to Pete Dunn. Remember, you can read his column for IBJ every 2 weeks, both in our print edition and online at ibj.com. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories from this week's paper I hope you'll check out. Greg Andrews takes us inside the legal battle between two of Indianapolis's most iconic retailers, Steak and Shake and Crew Car Wash, over the high-profile site of a Steak and Shake restaurant on East 86th Street in Nora. Also in this week's paper, Mickey Shuey gauges the strength of downtown's Mass Ave retail and restaurant corridor as it recovers from the pandemic and welcomes a new anchor on its northeast end, phase one of the $300 million Bottle Works District. And Susan Orr explores just how common it is for businesses to limit cell phone access for employees during work. You'll recall that after the mass shooting at the FedEx Ground facility in Indianapolis on April 15th, many employees couldn't contact their families because they didn't have their cell phones. Again, you could read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local business news and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to ibj.com and click the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.